knowing that you are God and in complete control. And we turn our hearts to you in Jesus' name. Everybody said, amen, amen. Thank you, Mickey. Where we're going to start part four today . If you've got your Bible, go ahead and turn over to Numbers, okay? Numbers, we're going to go to the 13th chapter. And as we're going through this, we're wanting to try to memorize the Bible. So it's Genesis, okay? What's next? Exodus, next. Leviticus, we're going to visit into Leviticus a little today. Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus. Deuteronomy. Oh, which one? Numbers or Deuteronomy? Which one? Okay, good for you guys. We're going to delve a little bit into Deuteronomy. I'm going to tell you one thing about Deuteronomy real quick as we get started this morning. Deuteronomy is a book unto itself. It's totally different than the other books. Basically, Deuteronomy is this. It's five speeches that Moses gives. Those five speeches, the first two speeches are to the first generation who came out of Egypt. The third speech is a mixture between them and their children. The last two speeches, even though it's written kind of in a first person format today, it is directed at the children of the children that came out of Egypt, the second generation. And those are the speeches, and we're going to look at just a little bit of that today. But the next book after that, anyone know what that one is? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, Joshua. We're going to spend a little time in Joshua today because that's the focus of our deal today. The conquest. The conquest where they go in and they get the land. And what we're doing is we're doing an overview of the Old Testament. Because many people just don't know how it flows together. So we're just looking over this. We're not touching everything in the Old Testament. We're hitting our major stories so we can see the story of redemption flowing through this. And our subject today is going to be Joshua. We've been talking about the Bible. And we've been talking about the story of the Bible and creation within it. That God created the planets and mankind out of His goodness. Not because He was lonely. Not because He was bored. Not because He didn't have anything better to do and said had some extra, you know, pixie dust that He needed to use some way. But He used it out of His goodness. His fullness. Not out of His barrenness. Not out of emptiness. Matter of fact, we talked about it the first week, speaking into emptiness where there's absolutely nothing. And the Trinity, God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit, God who has decided to reveal Himself in those three parts, personas, basically said this, let us open up the Trinity. Let us create man in our image. In our image, let us create Him and invite Him into this Trinity, our dance of holiness, of purity, of laughter, of joy, of respect, of honor. Let us open up and let them come and experience the wholeness that we have. And they did. They created man. But God had an enemy. And this enemy comes with a lie saying, oh, if you read of this fruit, and we talked about all that, oh, if you eat of this, you'll be like God. Because He's holding out on you. He's lying to you. He's cheating you. And they fell for that lie, that God is not good. And that lie has cascaded all the way down to where we live, our doorsteps today, that we still buy into that lie that God is not good. He's holding out on me. He doesn't want me to enjoy things of life because He's holding out on me because there's no fun. Premarital sex, He says no. Listen, He's lying to me. He's not good because it is fun and He created it anyway. But yet He created it. But He created it with a purpose and plan. And that we buy into that lie that He's not good. So that means that something is wrong in everything. Something is wrong in every country. Something is wrong in every government. Something is wrong in every state. There's something wrong in every capital of that state. There's something wrong in every business. There's something wrong in every school. There's something wrong in every church, every family. There's something wrong in every one of us that can only be corrected by His Lordship, by who He is. In Genesis 12, we went through the thing of seeing that God is lasering in on this one guy named Abraham, who lives in the Ur of Chaldees, who serves and worships the sun god, the moon god, sorry, that he carries a little, most likely, little statue in his pocket of the moon god, or a personal god, that when they would go to the marketplace and he would want to buy something, he would anoint it with oil, he would rub it and pray to this moon god that he would get a good deal on a camel, a good deal on a horse, a good deal here, a good deal. When he'd buy land, he'd want it to be blessed. People would take these and say, I want to have a family. Bless me in having a family, and take this God and say, be a God of my fertility, and they would rub it and anoint it, and they would carry it in their pockets. We referred back when you saw the movie, if you saw the movie Gladiator with Russell Crowe, one night he sent it to this altar with the candles, and he takes a little statue of his family, then he takes out his personal God. He calls him and he says, come follow me. He follows his voice, and we find out later in life that now he is serving this God, and he has thrown away the pocket God. No longer serving the God of the moon, but he's serving this voice. And this voice says, I will come and I will make a nation out of you, out of your loins, out of your wife. You will have a child and more children and more children. Look at the stars. There's going to be that many. Look at the sand. There's going to be that many. Plus, I'm going to give you land. And he follows this voice. And as time goes on, he has a son named Isaac. Isaac has a son named Jacob. Before we started this series, we did a 4-week series on Jacob alone, him and Joseph, his son. And we, as we move through this story, we see that Jacob's name was changed to what? Israel. That's where the name Israel and the nation comes from him, because of the promise that was given to Abraham. Now, Jacob has 12 sons. Can anyone name any of those sons? Joseph, good. 11 more. Any more? Levi, good name. Another one. Who? Benjamin. Another one. Dan. Reuben. Issachar. No, you're not going to look up on your cheat sheet. Give me a break. You're supposed to know this stuff. I love that. But he has 12. Those 12 sons, Levi, Gad, Dan, Naphtali, Benjamin, they become the 12 tribes of Israel. We saw the dysfunctionality of this family, the most dysfunctional family we probably could ever look at. And if you come from a dysfunctional family, you're going, how can God use me? Still, out of all of this, there's 12 sons, and they become the 12 tribes of Israel. In the 12 sections of Israel themselves. Famine strikes the land. And through Joseph, who they sold into slavery, who ends up in Egypt, who becomes Pharaoh's right-hand man, and this whole process through that story, he tells him, go home, get all your brothers, get all your sisters, get all your cows, get all your rams, come here and bring daddy. And 70 family members move, plus the servants that were with them. They move to Egypt. 400 years later, in the midst of slavery, a child is born. Begin to listen to the parallels of different things are here. A child is born. The father is a descendant of which person? Levi, who was one of the 12 sons. They don't throw him in the river because, see, Pharaoh comes and says, throw that firstborn in the river and drown him. And we talked about, we don't know how many tens of thousands of young boys, baby boys, were thrown in a river. And the smell of the stench of floating carcasses decaying in the Nile. But they don't throw him in. They put him in a grain basket. And they set him to sail. 100 years later, we're going to find that this other one, child, when kids were being killed, wasn't put in a grain basket, but was put in a trough where grain is put, where cows come to eat. That's called a manger. Moses comes up. He leaves this Exodus. We looked at the story. We looked at the plagues. We saw that the battle wasn't between God and the Egyptian people, but the battle was between God and the gods of Egypt, of Ra, the sun god, of Hapi, the Nile god, of Ekstus, the frog god of fertility. We see this whole battle that's taking place. They cross the Red Sea. Great story in itself. They come to a place called Mount Sinai. And that is where they get the 10 words, or the 10 commandments. That Moses goes up and he gets this. Can anyone tell me any of those commandments real quick? Give me one. Who? Kill, don't kill, don't steal. Don't lie. Don't bring any other idols. In other words, don't take a piece of wood and carve a cow out of it or a frog out of it and call it me. I'll have no other guy before me. So he gives them these ten things. We're going to talk about this in a little bit. But it's basically marriage proposal. He's basically coming to marry. The divine God is coming to marry the nation of Israel. And it's wedding talk as you walk through this. And it comes on down to where when you have a Jewish wedding, all the different things, the chuppah, all those things that are in part of that are all taken from the Mount Sinai experience as the covering, as the protection. And he's saying this, listen, and he does the vows. He said, these are the vows, the commitment. He says this, if you'll have no other God before me, that you don't lie, that you don't tell somebody they did something when they didn't, or you don't say they said something when they did. You don't do these things. Don't lie, don't steal, don't kill, don't cheat. Don't sleep with your neighbor's wife. When he says these kind of things, he's saying, like, if you'll do these things, then I will be your God and you will be my people. And the people stood there and they said, I do. And there's this marriage, this covenant, this contract that comes between the two. So we have these 10 words. And as we go on a little bit further, now we come to where we are today. They are at the doorstep of the promised land. Something that was promised 500 years before to a guy in Abraham that you will have a people and I will give you a land. They now have the people. They are at the threshold of obtaining the land, the promise given 500 years before. We're going to look at 4 stories today. I'm going to try to go as fast as I can through these stories. But my prayer is, my hope is, in the middle of these stories, that one of these things will hit each and every one of us here in some way or another. That when we walk out of here today, we have a better understanding of things in the story of the Old Testament, but things begin to change. Nobody changes overnight. It's a process. I wish it could. I wish I could take all of my lessons and put them in a gigantic syringe and come in here and stick it in Robert's arm and just go boom, and he knows everything right off the bat. Then someone smarter than me needs to give him another shot because I don't know it all. You know what I mean? But it's a growing process that we come to. He comes in and they're on the side of the river and Moses gets this great idea. We're going to go spy on the land. So there's 12 sons who out of them come 12 tribes. Out of that grows a great 12 different like nations within this nation. He chooses one from each one of these tribes. And he says, I want you to go in and I want you to spy on the land. It's like cloak and dagger time, okay? You're going to sneak in and you're going to look at the land. Why? Because they've never been there before. Because they can't go down to Walmart and buy a Rand O'Reilly map to find out what the lay of the land is. They can't get on the internet and do MapQuest. They're going in and they're looking where the valleys are, where the rivers are, where it flows. Then they're looking whether there's 4 to 5 cities. And why is this important? Because as a soldier and you're going to go into the land, you need to know what you're up against in the opposition. Do they have high walls? Do we need to build ladders? Do we need ramming devices? What do we need? You know, we got a couple of bows and arrows and a couple of shields. We made a couple of makeshift, spears on the way here, but we're not really an army with armament and that kind of stuff. We need to find out who they are and what they're going to do, because we need to know the lay of the land. So this is where we're going to pick up in Numbers chapter 13, give you a second to get there. And we're going to walk through this. We're going to do a lot of reading today, and God's going to speak today. Chapter 13, verse 18. It says this: "See what the land is like, and whether the people who live there are strong or if they're weak, if they're few or if they're many. What kind of land do they live in? What is the topography? Is it good or is it bad land? What kind of towns do they live in? Are they walled? Are they fortified? How is the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are there trees or not trees? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land, because it was the time of the seasons of grape." Now the next set of verses say this: they go in and they're there for 40 days. Now 40 is an interesting number. I'm just going to throw this out. How many days was Jesus in the wilderness? 40 days. How many days did it rain with Noah? 40. We see these numbers keep popping up. You know, so there's some importance to that. We're not going to spend any time there. I just thought I'd give you that for free. So he goes, they're in there for 40 days. They're checking out the land. They're looking. They're finding pomegranates and they're finding grapes and they're cutting these clusters of grapes off that are just gigantic, and they're coming back. And down at verse 27 it says, "And they gave Moses this account: we went into the land which you sent us, and you know what? God was right to tell you that it flowed with milk and honey. I mean, here is the fruit. Look at the size of these grapes, man. Welches would be really envious of this. But the people who live there are powerful. The cities are fortified, and they're large. We saw the descendants of Anak." Now, the descendants of Anak, let me tell you, the only one I can think of that guy today is Shaq O'Neal, okay? They were big, all right? They were like giants. It says that they were deal of Anak. And at verse 30, though, Caleb goes, whoa, he silenced him. He's like stands between these guys and before Moses and says, "Listen, we should go up there and we should take the land. We need to possess the land, for we can do it." You got these 10 guys that are standing there, and they're saying, "Oh, dude. I mean, the land, you're right. It flows with milk and honey. But there's giants there. There's big basketball players. And these big basketball players, they got spears. They got fortified cities. It's dangerous stuff to go there. We cannot. We're like bugs. And he'll squish us." Matter of fact, he says, it's like we're grasshoppers in their eyes. Chapter 14, it says, "And that night all the people of the community raised their voices and wept out loud. And all the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron and the whole assembly and said to them, if we had only died in Egypt, we wouldn't have this problem. Or if we had died in the desert like all those other, we wouldn't be here. Why is the Lord bringing this land so that we can fall by the sword, our wives, our children, all these people? We need a new leader. We need to fire Moses. We need a new leader, and he can take us back to Egypt." I submit to you, this isn't one of the greatest moments of their journey. It ain't going right. Let's pick a leader and go back. They'll squash us. If you had one word to describe what they were going through, anyone know what that word might be? Oh, that's a good word. Fear. In other words, they were scared. You know what? I would probably be in the same boat. I mean, I've been living off the land for 40 years. Haven't had to hunt. I just go out and pick up manna. I just have to get my bucket to go to a rock that pours out water. I mean, God's done all these great things, but yet I still murmur. I still grumble. I still just kind of rail in my heart at this. And something tragic happens here. God basically says this, listen, you don't want to go in the promised land? Your wish is my command. You're going to stay in the desert for 40 years. But your children, and that's where we talked about the last two speeches in Deuteronomy, your children will get to go into this land. We talked about that stretch of time in there. We called it a series called The Land in Between. If you want to pick that up, you can get with Buddy, and we talk about the land between, the things that happen in between where they were and where they're going, not where they really wanted to be. And how we get stuck sometimes in the land between. We spent that time in there. But I need to speak to you for just a moment in your life. Just a moment as we look at this. There are times when God is nudging you in a certain direction. And we become paralyzed by fear. Don't raise your hand, but every one of us has done that. We come to a point where we get paralyzed and this wall just kind of goes up like a fortified city and we get scared and it stops any significant movement that we would have through God. I was listening several years ago. I cannot remember the guy's name, honestly, but he was a country and western guy. And he talked about his alcoholism and how it was absolutely killing him and he was going to die if he didn't do something, but he was scared to enter a clinic for this one thing. His fear was, I have been drunk for so long. I have friends because of that. They think I'm funny. If I become sober, I don't know if I can be funny. If I become sober, I don't know if I'll have friends anymore. That fear paralyzed him from taking the next step over from the help that he actually needed. It's like a girl. She's been dating this guy for like 4 years. Grandma keeps talking to her, saying, when are y'all going to get married? When are you going to get married? When are you going to get married? You know, and she hates that question because she doesn't have an answer. Then all of a sudden, invitations are written and sent out, and there's going to be a marriage. I mean, they're doing practice, tuxes are done, and all of a sudden, she comes to a point where she realizes one day that this guy has been lying to her for years. And it's not a question of maturity, it's a question of character. And she comes to this point, if I marry this guy, then I am going to be stuck in a relationship where lies are going to hurt and fear will paralyze her instead of bailing out and doing the right thing and having to face grandma and says, the wedding date, there is no wedding date. You see how fear can paralyze us? I find that with people. When God is calling them to a generous life of giving, hey, live on 90% so you can give 10% away. The problem with that, people come with this mentality. Number one, I can never make it. There is no way I could ever do that. And this fear paralyzes them from stepping into where God says, I want to bless you. Or they come with this whole thing, I'll never get what I want. I'll never get. God is cheating me out of that. And this fear will paralyze us from stepping into that. Can I share what happened with you the other day? Alvin, God has been dealing with him about the area of tithing, hasn't he? Yeah, pretty hardly. At work, actually crying. So he finally, last week, throws his first money into the deal, and a bill comes in for $168.50. He says, what am I going to do? Next day, he gets a letter in the mail with a check for $169.10. God meets his every need. I won't tell you that's going to happen every time. But I will tell you that when God says, try me at this, step into this life, into this relationship, I will take care of you. It might be in health. It might be in all different kinds of things. But he's saying, I want to bless you. And this fear will prevent us from stepping into the things of God. Fear will stop almost any movement in your life. It can be in the area of marriage counseling or in counseling. And here's the attitude of most people. I'm not going to go to the pastor or I'm not going to go to the marriage counselor because I don't want them to know my business. Understand, most everybody already around you knows you have marriage problems. It's already fallen apart. And the thing is fear will keep us from coming to the very person or the very place where he can help us and the only place we can help. So my word is this: when fear arises, be strong and courageous. We'll see that as we go on. They're at the doorstep of their promise. They want to elect a new leader. In other words, God, leave us alone. We want to go back. And that's what fear does. It keeps you from stepping into the promise that he has for you. And that's why an 11-day journey turns into a 40-year journey. My challenge is, if you sense God nudging you, let him push you on into what he has for you. Be strong. Be courageous. Do not let fear paralyze you. Okay? Let's fast forward 40 years. We're going to spin the tape forward. We're going a little bit forward. Moses has died. Like I said, we're not going day by day in this teaching. We're taking jump. Moses dies, their leader. Let's go to Joshua now. Joshua chapter 1. You ready? Joshua chapter 1, verse, page 197. After the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord. I like that. Just that. Wouldn't that be the greatest epithet you could ever have when someone spoke at your funeral? Don, the servant of the Lord. CJ, the servant of the Lord. You know, Alvin, the servant of the Lord. What this incredible epithet. Goes on to say, he said, I will get in verse 3, I will give you every place where you set your foot as I promised Moses. Your territory will be extended from the desert to Lebanon, and from the great rivers of Euphrates. Now he goes on and says this, and as we're listening to this, what God is telling Jacob is the very thing he told who? Abraham just explained a little bit more. Moses just explained a little bit more. So the promise is rolling. Verse 5, no one will be able to stand up against you in all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, as I met with him, as I talked with him, you saw it. That's what I'm going to do with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Sounds like something out of the New Testament, doesn't it? Be strong and courageous, because I will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to your forefathers and give it to them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all of the what? Okay, this is what he's telling him. All of the law. What is the law that he's talking about here? The Ten Commandments, the ten words. You got it. Here he goes. The law my servant Moses gave to you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Do not let the book of the what? Law depart from your mouth. Then it says this important word. What is it? Meditate. Think on it on day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything that's written in it. Then you will be what? Prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you to be what? Be strong and courageous. Do not be terrified. Do not be discouraged. For the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Okay. He tells him something important. The book of the law. These Ten Commandments. He says this. Meditate on it day and night. Do it day and night. Important lesson for you and I. Are we doing that? Every day do we wake? God, is there any other God that I'm placing before you today that doesn't need to be there, that should be gone? Am I doing that? Am I placing this? Am I placing that before you? Am I, Father, I want to crucify that. I want to die that. As we go, listen, someone asked me a question, and I can't lie. I have to give them the truth. I have to tell the truth. I'm not going to sleep with the neighbor's wife. I'm not going to bear false witness. I'm not going to say somebody said something when they didn't. And I'm not going to say they did say something when they didn't. I am not going to covet. I'm not going to steal. If we do that every day of our life, do you know how many sins would just automatically fall off that we wouldn't go into? If we were careful to do that every day, that's what he tells him. Do it every day. Then I will make your way prosperous. Not because you drop an offering in and claim, you know, I'm putting in $100 so that God, you owe me $100. It doesn't work that way. He's not talking about that prosperity anyway. He's talking about the flower of our life blooming in fullness with him that he's called us to. And he's saying, be prosperous in that area. Question then becomes, have you been asked to step up to a new level in your life? Or has a new level of life presented itself? Here's this guy that is under the shadow of Moses. He has been a leader, but he has not been the leader. And now he's standing in front of millions of people he's going to be responsible for. You might think he might feel a little scared, a little overwhelmed, a little of all that stuff. And what happens? It may be in the area where God's telling you and me to step up to a new level. It may be caretaking of a loved one. It may be stepping up to a leadership position in your church. This is what God says, be strong. Be courageous. I am with you. I will not leave you. I will not forsake you. Just like I've been with other leaders before you, I will be that way with you. I will meet with you. I will talk with you. Therefore, meditate on the book of the law day and night, so that I'll make your way prosperous. See how that story just kind of walks through? They crossed the Jordan. Now, what happened at the Red Sea when Moses crossed? It parted. Guess what happened at the Jordan? It parted. Same thing. So God's already doing the same thing he did with them. They come in and they divide the land. If we look at a map of this whole area, we'll find out that Jericho's right like in the middle. It's a strategic plan that God sends them in on. In other words, when they go into this place, they're dividing the country from north to south. With the trade routes, it's dividing from east to west. So this is great war strategy. And God gives them the strategy. Here's the strategy. Get that box with the Ten Commandments in it, put it out in front of the people, and gather the band. Okay? That's strategy. I'm going like, yeah, that sounds like good strategy to me. I would get the night vision goggles on to where I can see at night. I would do it a whole different way. But this is God. Get the box, put it out there, have some singers and dancers, and gather the band. Okay, let's look at Joshua. There's a reason why he does this. Joshua chapter 6. Most all of us know this story. But I'm going to tell you what, we're going to try to talk about a question that comes out of here that I know if we haven't had it, people around us do. Verse 6, now Jericho was tightly shut up because of the Israelites. No one went out and no one came in. And the Lord said to Joshua, see, I have delivered Jericho into your hands. Now they're standing outside. The city's walled up. No one's going in and out. And God's already saying, see, I've already given it to you. Wow. See that I've delivered Jericho into your hands, right with its king and fighting men. Now I want you to march around the city once with all your armed men. Do it for 6 days. Have 7 priests carry the trumpets of ram's horn in front of the ark. And on the 7th day, march around the city 7 times with the priest blowing him with a loud blast on the trumpets. Have all the people give a loud shout. The walls of the city are going to collapse, and the people will go in. Every man straightway in. Okay, here's the plan. Gather all these guys, and you're going to march around the city once every day. So Joshua goes, okay, here we go. Here's the box. Here's the band. Here's our guys. Let's march around the city once. Be quiet, don't say a word. 2, second day, second time, 3rd day. And they do this for 7 days. And then on the last day, they march around it 7 times. They blow the trumpet and the walls what? They collapse. Verse 24 says, and they burned the whole city and everything in it. They put the silver and the gold and the articles of bronze and iron into the treasury of the Lord. The city fell, but it wasn't by their strength. It was by whose strength? God. By Him and Him alone. I think God wants them to know and understand this. You didn't do this. I did this. You didn't have anything to do with it. I did this. And it was God who fought for them. And then they went into the city and they killed everybody and everything. It's a great story that leads me to that question. It's a disturbing question. Why does God tell them to kill everybody? 7-month-old baby girls, 70-year-old men. How do we answer that? Listen, there's things in my life that I have no issue with in faith at all, at all. I have no doubt or problem with, or never have stumped my toe over the idea that God picks up some clay, forms a man, kisses life into him. Never struggle with that. I never struggle with the idea of a virgin birth. I just don't. I don't struggle with God setting aside all of His glory and becoming a three-dimensional man and coming to live. I don't struggle with that. But there's times that I read these and you know, you want to try to... Why would a loving God say, go in and kill all those people? And I'm going to try to answer that for us today. Okay? And as I do this, I want to tell you this. I'm 56 years old. And this is the best answer I can give you at my age. Maybe when I'm 66, maybe I can give you a better answer than this. But we're going to walk through this and we're going to look some scriptures so we have an idea. Because has that question ever plagued anybody? Oh, several of us. And I can't tell you that I'm automatically 100% right, because listen, I believe even after a billion years in heaven, I'm still not going to know all the facets of who God is. That He is so greater than I am. That there's these questions that sometimes I have to accept by faith, because I'm never going to know the right answer. But to answer this question, we need to go back 500 years to the same promise that was given to Abraham that we talked about 2 weeks ago. Says this. Then the Lord said to him, know for certain that 400 years your descendants will be strangers in a country. Anyone know what that country is? That's Egypt. In a country not of their own, they will be enslaved and mistreated there. We know that story, right? But I will punish the nations they serve as slaves. Who is that? Egypt again. Pharaoh, the gods of that nation. And afterwards, they will come out with great possessions. We talked about that 2 weeks ago. You, however, will go to your ancestors. In other words, Abraham, you're going to die in peace and be buried at a good old age. In the fourth generation of your descendants will come back here. Then comes this strange line. For the sin of the Amorites has not reached its full measure yet. Interesting statement. So let's begin to look at that. It appears that God is not only doing something with the children of Israel, but He's also doing something with the Amorites. I don't know what that is. It could be He's given them 400 years more to repent of the sins and the wickedness that there's in. I think there's a story that we might look at later of about a guy who gets ate up by a big fish, spit out on, and he goes and preaches to people in a city of Nineveh to turn from their wicked ways. I don't have a story here, but I wonder if God's mercy is there. Their wickedness had not reached a certain level as it had in the days of Noah. It got so bad that God says, I'm starting over. Okay? I'm going to bring a flood. Noah, you preach, pack up your family, you're going for a long boat ride. We're taking the first cruise in the Bible. Understand that these people in the land of Cana, where they're going, are not innocent people. So this idea of how can God kill and tell them to kill innocent people, understand they're not innocent. What do I mean like this? The God that they worshiped in this country was a God named Moloch. Do you know what the form of worship is? They would take their firstborn child. They would take it to the statue of Moloch. They would lay it there. And they would burn and sacrifice their first child. So 400 years of child sacrifices taking place in this place. The level is growing. That what fears me about our nation and abortion. The other god that's being worshipped here is Baal. Temple prostitution, sexual perversion. One of the greatest sins in our country now is everything is sex, 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 and drenched in that. And going into our schools, giving condoms away, that kind of thing. Spirituality and politics, like we said earlier, cannot be separated. They're entwined together. The people of this land were not innocent people by any stretch of the imagination. It was a land of wickedness. You follow me so far? Okay, let's set that aside. He's telling Abraham their sin has not reached this level yet, but there is going to come a day. And when that day comes, my wrath is going to pour out, and it's going to be hard and heavy on this area. Let's go to Deuteronomy now, chapter 9, and take a look at this as we try to. And I know we got four stories. Don't worry, the last two stories will go real fast. Deuteronomy chapter 9. But there comes a time that we've got to start answering and trying to get a grasp on some of these questions that puzzle us. Hear, O Israel. Let's see. Verse 1, it goes, hear, O Israel, that you are about to cross the Jordan, go in and dispossess great nations that are stronger than you with large cities that have walls up to the sky. Verse 3, but be assured today that the Lord your God is the one who goes ahead of you like devouring fire. Listen, put this name in the back of your head. A guy named Gordon, friend of mine, he was dispossessed and had to leave his house in Bastrop this last week as the fires raged. He got to come back home the other day. 1,300 homes are gone. Homes across the street for him are gone. His home isn't. Now he's leading in a group of trying to do, you know, reaching out to these people. What an incredible time of ministry. But anyway, be assured that the Lord your God goes out like a devouring fire. He will destroy them. He will subdue them before you. And you will drive them out and annihilate them quickly as the Lord has promised. After the Lord has driven them out before you, do not say to yourself, the Lord has brought me here to take possession of this land because of my righteousness. No, it is on the account of what? Of wickedness of these nations. And the Lord is going to drive them out before you. It is not because of your righteousness or your integrity that you are going to take possession of the land, but on account of the wickedness of these nations, the Lord your God will drive them out before you and accomplish what he has sworn to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. Understand, then, it is not because of your righteousness. Now, this is the third time he's telling us this. Not the time of the righteousness, but the Lord your God is giving you this good land to possess for you. Okay, three times he tells them, when you go in there, it's not because you're good. It's because of their wickedness. Let's hold on to that to help us answer this question. It's because of their wickedness. Understand that when God told them to go in there, they're not killing innocent people, but people of wickedness. When they enter this land, their faith was so fragile that they could be seduced away from God very, very easily. If they go into this land, the wickedness is that bad, their faith will never get off the ground. So now let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 20. Is this helping anybody? Three of you. Okay, we'll do it all again next week to help the other five of you. Deuteronomy chapter 20. Verse 16. However, in the cities of the nation of the Lord your God is giving you as an inheritance, do not leave alive anything that breathes. Completely destroy them, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Canaanites, the Perizzites, the however you pronounce that, Hivites or something, Jebusites, as Yahweh, remember we talked about that when it's Lord, capital L, capital O, capital RD, Yahweh your God has commanded you. Otherwise, they will teach you to follow all the detestable things they do in worshiping their God, and you will sin against Yahweh your God. Leviticus, let's go there. And this is the last deal, we'll go in there, but we're going to flip back to Leviticus. Chapter 18. This becomes very, very interesting. You must not do as they did in Egypt where you used to live. You must not do as they do in the land of Cana where I am bringing you. Do not follow their practices. You must obey my law and be careful to follow my decrees. I am Yahweh your God. Keep my decrees and laws, for the man who obeys them will live by them. I am the Lord. Verse 25. Even the land, listen about the wickedness of these people. Even the land was defiled. So I punished it for the sin, and the land, strong word, vomited out of its inhabitants. But you must keep my decrees and my law. The native born and the aliens living among you must not do any of these detestable things. For all these things were done by people who lived in the land before you, and the land became what? Defiled because of what they did. And if you defile the land, it will what? Vomit you out as it vomited out the other nations. Everyone who does any of these detestable things, such persons must be cut off from their people. Keep my requirements. Do not follow any of the detestable customs that were being practiced before you came here, and do not defile yourself. I am Lord thy God. In other words, this is what he's saying. He's saying, guys, it's not because of your righteousness that this is being done. It's because of the wickedness. Now, don't go do the same thing. The land's vomiting them out because of their wickednesses. But if you go in there and do the same thing, guess what? The land's going to vomit you out. It gets pretty serious about how God is. God is telling them, if you go in and do the child sacrifice thing, the sexual perversion thing, I'll bring someone else to clear you out. In other words, I can't use a flood because I said I wouldn't, but I could use hurricanes, I could use tornadoes, I could use earthquakes, I could use any of these. I'm choosing you and your sword to bring my wrath on these people because of their wickedness. But don't do what they did, or you'll get cleared out. Years later, we'll talk about this. The Babylonians come in. They decimate the place. They take them into captivity. Basically, the story there is simply this. God is saying, don't go there, don't go there, don't go there. To the prophet Jeremiah, please don't go there. If you go there, this is what's going to happen. And then they went there and he went, oh, okay. You're going to go into exile for 70 years. And he gives them this promise. I have a purpose and I have a plan for you, not to destroy you, and I'm going to be there with you. And he gives that promise at the beginning of the 70-year exile, not at the end, but in the beginning, I'll be with you. I have a purpose and I have a plan for you. God isn't playing favorites here. If you behave like they did, then the land's going to vomit you out. The third story is Caleb. Who's Caleb? Anyone remember him? He's a sidekick of Joshua in the very beginning. He's one of the 12 guys that goes into the land, the spies. And they go in there for what? How many years? They're in there for 40 years. Then we have this story. He comes in and he tells his story. We'll just tell the story for time's sake. He comes in and here's this land, and Caleb gets up and he says, "Listen, it's time for us to march in. I'm ready to go. I am more than able. I am 85 years old. I am just as strong as I was when I was 45 years old. See that hill over there? See that fortified city and the walls and the mountain beyond that? Give me that. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to rock and roll." This guy's 85 years old and he wants to take on fortified cities. My statement to you, if you're 85 years old in your 80s, the last question you should be asking today is simply this: what are we having for lunch? If you're in that age bracket, the thing is we need to be asking this: God, what is it that you have for me today that I can do and go on with you? Now, I just need to say this, and I know she doesn't like it when I do it, but Norma, I remember the day that we did Cliff's funeral. This is the first word she said to me after that day as she hugged me. She looked at me in the eyes and says, "You and I still have work to do." I remember that statement just as clear as a bell. And I'm watching a lady in her 80s still going to the jail, still going and ministering, leading people to the Lord, having a Bible study in her house. And she doesn't sit back going, "What am I going to have for lunch?" She's saying, "God, what mountain do you have? What fortified city do you have for me today?" And she begins to march in that direction. Is it possible to be 80 and still have this passion and desire for God? Yes, it is. How did Caleb become an 80-year-old guy like he did? He became an 80-year-old guy like he did because that's the kind of guy he was when he was 40. And most likely it was the kind of guy he was when he was 20. What kind of guy was he at 40? 10 spies are going, "We can't go there. We're bugs." He's going, "Listen, it's a promise. We need to go there. He has given us this land and I am not going to quake in fear." The decisions in our heart when we're in our 40s, and this is talking to us in midlife, because not all of us are facing, you know, old age right now. Most of us are right in that middle bracket. As we face that, the decisions that you and I make in our 40s and 50s determine who we are going to be when we're in our 60s and when we're in our 70s and when we're in our 80s. Some very bad stuff can happen to you in the middle of your 50s, 40s, 50s. Some bad things can happen to you. You could lose a child. Jimmy and I have a friend. 3 days ago, his 23-year-old son was killed on the job in West Texas. Some terrible things. He's in his 40s. Decisions that he's going to make now are going to affect who he's going to be 20 years from now, 25 years from now. You follow what I'm saying? You could lose your house, lose your job, business could tank, any of those things. And how you react and how you respond to those things is going to determine what you are later in life. A lot of bad things can happen. Listen, God is writing this beautiful story in this book. And it's got some tragic things in it. One of the things I love when I'm in airports and I walk by and I see someone that has their Bible there, I walk by them the first time and say, "Ooh, that's a really, really good book. You're going to love the ending." But there's a lot of tragic things in it. And you're in my life, God is writing this wonderful story about us. And it may have some tragic things in it. But God isn't about periods. He's about commas. We put a period and say, "It's over. It's finished." And we shut down. And God takes the eraser and say, "It ain't finished. I'm still writing. I'm the author and the finisher of your faith, not you." And what we do in the middle of our 40s and 50s will determine what we are in our 80s. I believe that Caleb was the kind of guy when he was 80 because he was that kind of guy when he was 40. This is what I want to say to you. I want to say, friends, guard your hearts. I'm at conference this week. I wore this today because I wanted to show something. Went to conference, and one of my favorite speakers there is Jim Scott. I'm not going to tell the story of why I love him so much. But he goes to one of the our printing presses, Four Square Printing Presses, to pick up a bunch of tracks that he's fixing to take overseas. And they had a bunch of these things laying around. Now, this is what we call a witnessing thing when we go on trips and mission trips. It's just got some colored beads on it. And you use it as saying, look, see that gold? God has made a place of heaven for you and I. Simply put, but we can't get there because of the darkness of our heart, the blackness, the sin. But Jesus died for us, the red one. And he gave his life for us that we become clean and white and pure as the snow. And if you're in Central America, it's the white clouds because they don't know what snow is. And then green, I want to grow after God. And you're going, oh, that's good. Now, his mother-in-law lives with him. She's 75 years old right now. At 65 years old, she had a stroke. It shut down the whole right side of her body. She cannot use her right arm. She cannot talk. She only mumbles when she gets excited. It's that's all she can do. So her right side shut down. She can't talk. She just can mumble. She can't clothe herself. She has to be taken care of in every area and aspect. They go to that deal that day, and they leave there. And she is animated all the way home. You know, and they're just finally put her to bed. What's going on? Next morning, she's up, just animated. And finally, Jim's wife says, I know you're trying to tell us something, you know, and she starts going through questions like, and finally hits this question, you want to go anywhere? She gets, okay, we're going somewhere. Now he said, imagine a lady who can't talk and she's in the car and she's trying to give you directions where she wants to go. Okay, he said, it is wild. Right turn, left turn, she's animated. They finally pull up in front of a Michael's, like a Hobby Lobby, and says, this where you want to go? And she's, oh yeah. Put her in a wheelchair, up and down each aisle, until they came to an aisle with beads. She can't use her right arm. And she takes a gold bead and put it in her mouth, and with her left hand, she threads that, and threads that. She has just made 70,000 of these. So if you're 80 years old and you say, my life is spent and I don't have anything to do and God can't use me, that's a lie. She's saying, give me that mountain. Give me that that fortified city. Give me that thing. Her question isn't what I'm going to have for lunch, because she can't talk anyway. But her question isn't what I have for lunch. Her deal is, what is my next mountain? She has made 70,000 of these. They go to Foursquare, and they're going all over the world. If you're here today and you say, I can't do anything, I'll buy you the beads and the leather. I'll cut it for you, and you can string them, and we can make them for our next trip. Do not let your age shut you down, and I'm saying guard your heart. If you have an unforgiving, bitter spirit in your life when you're 40 because something happens, most likely for the next 20 years, you're going to make everyone around you miserable because of that spirit that's inside of you. Guard your heart. If you got to get things straight, don't let the fear of God bumping you to take care of forgiveness, take care of something in your life. You step out and you go there. The last story I want to talk about real quick. It's this thing with Joshua. I'll flip it through so you can get the verses, but we're going to go to the end of Joshua. Joshua chapter 23. This is what we're going to close with, a story of fear, a story of stepping up, a story of stepping up, a story of preparing ourselves for older age as we're coming that and guarding our house. Joshua chapter 23 comes with this incredible story. Verse 6 through 8, and I'm just going to read a little bit. Be very strong and be careful. This is Joshua talking to the people. Tell me, have you heard these words before? Be very strong, be careful to obey all that's written in the book of the law of Moses. It's what God spoke to him. At the closing of his life, he's referring back to that. Without turning to the side, left or right, do not associate with these nations that remain among you. Do not invoke the names of their gods or swear by them. You must not serve them or bow down to them. But you're to hold fast to the Lord your God. Verse 16, if you violate the covenant of the Lord of your God, which he commanded you, and go and serve other gods and bow down to them, the Lord's anger will burn against you and will quickly perish from the good of the land he has given you. It's a lot of the speech of Deuteronomy that Moses has given. Verse 14 says, now fear the Lord, of the 24th chapter. Now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods of your forefathers that they worship beyond the river of Egypt and serve the Lord. You mean these guys have spent 40 years in the wilderness? They've crossed the Jordan. They've entered into Jericho. They've seized the land. And they're still carrying little pocket idols that was their dad's or their grandfather's that came from Egypt. He says, turn from those. Get rid of those. I love the way he just throws this thing down. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourself a day who you'll serve, whether you'll serve gods of your forefathers, the pocket idols you carried around, or beyond the river to the gods of the Amorites of the land that you are living. But as for me, he's throwing it down, guys. As for me and my household, we'll serve the Lord. Verse 21, the people said to Joshua, no, 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 we will serve the Lord. And then Joshua says, throw away those foreign gods among you. Yield your heart to the Lord. And the people said to Joshua, we will serve the Lord our God. As I read that, there's just one thing that comes up with me. It must be really hard to leave our gods behind. It must be really hard to leave drugs that seem to sustain us or alcohol that seems to cradle and carry us. It's really hard to give up on this dire deal of greed and money and become a true worshiper of God. It must be real hard with our gods of this egocentric lifestyle we'll leave where we're number one and God is number two or number four or number 10. He throws it down. Today's the day to make a decision. And as we're about to be dismissed this morning, there's four things in where his Father spoke to you. Is it in the area of fear that you're afraid to make any kind of movement and it has stopped you? My word is be strong and be courageous. If God is nudging you, then he's doing the same thing about stepping up. I will be with you. I will never leave you. I will never forsake you. I will be with each and every one of you, just like I was with Moses, just like I was with Joshua, just like I was with David, just like I was with all those guys. I will be with you and never leave you or forsake you. I'm calling you to step up to a deeper walk. Why? Not because I need the help, but I'm doing this for you. Because as you do this, you become more disciplined. You understand me better. And you become even a stronger, wider door of sanctification in the household and the people that you live. That's scary to go from just being a leader to the leader of whatever it is. Preparing for old age. Most of us here aren't there. Some of us are. But most of us aren't. Guard your hearts, because decisions you make today will affect tomorrow. And the last is just throwing it down and laying down a line. As for me and my house, I'll serve the Lord. It's hard to throw away gods, and I probably have lots of little clusters of gods that are still there that God is bringing up to me, and I'm having to get rid of those. But the promises that He's called to me, I'm willing to get rid of those so that I don't fall away from Him. Amen?
Amen.
Let's all stand this morning. Every head bowed, every eye closed. No one looking around. I'm just asking this one question. You may be here this morning and something has tugged at your heart more than just this message that we gave, that you may say, I'm outside of this king in this kingdom and I need to make some kind of movement towards that today. I'm not going to embarrass you. I'm not going to call you up front. But what I'll say, if that's you today and you're here and there needs to be some kind of movement in your life that I want to accept this Christ, if that's you, I just ask you to lift your eyes to me and meet my eyes. Other than that, I ask you not to look around. Anyone here? Is that you? You need to make movement to Him today? Let me tell you what. Today's the greatest thing that has ever taken place in your life. All the promises He gave Abraham, He gave Isaac, He gave Jacob, He gave David, He's given to you today. Your life is about to change and already has. Just by looking at me and saying, I need movement there, God's already flooding into your life. Jimmy over here, raise your hand. See this guy over here? I want you to spend a few minutes with him after service. We want to give you a Bible. We want to pray with you. We want to help you get started today, okay? Proud of you. Thank you for coming into the kingdom. Let me be the first to say. If you're here struggling in any area of those fears, those are things that you take care of. If you need prayer, we'll have prayer for you. But some of these are just drawing lines in the sand and saying, I will serve the Lord. Amen. May you have a great day. May the blessings of God be upon you. May you feel the strength of His Word and His marrow inside of your life, bringing and responding to the things that He's called you. May that fear dissipate. May you begin to present yourself in a deal of stepping up with Him in your life. May you today begin to prepare for later on in life by guarding your heart and correcting things that are at step. And may you make that commitment that as for me and my household, we will serve the Lord. Have a great day. Let us worship Him one more time before we go. Take us away, Mitch.